Ruin My Childhood.
Thank you for listening to Ruin My Childhood, the podcast where we decide if some things are better off left in the past. I'm Mike.
And I'm Kat.
And today we're doing a special favor for one of our patrons. They requested that we cover Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and I think we could oblige.
Yeah, why not?
And like, I actually really liked this movie as a kid. How did you feel about it?
I hated it.
You hated it?
I hated it.
So I know if our listeners, you know, some of our longtime listeners might remember we covered Space Jam, and I do remember you saying that something about mixing live action with animation creeps you out.
That's probably it. But I can't remember. I just remember back in the day I watched it as a kid and I hated it.
I mean, hate is such a strong word for this movie.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's fine.
So it's been a very long time since I've watched this movie. I honestly can't remember the last time I've watched it. But I have, and I don't remember the full plot. Obviously, I know Roger Rabbit got framed. but I don't remember what he got framed for. Obviously, Jessica Rabbit is still a huge cultural icon right now. People still dress up as her all the time.
She hat.
Bob Hoskins is in it. I remember him. And I remember Christopher Lloyd creeping me out as a kid in this movie.
Like, well, that's part of the appeal of Christopher Lloyd.
What I mean, like, so do you remember the plot of this movie at all?
Not one bit.
So, I only remember bits of it. So, like, I know he got framed and Bob Hoskins is, like, a PI who's trying to help him. But he also doesn't like cartoon characters. And do you want me to spoil it for you or do you just want to watch the movie?
I'd just rather watch it.
Okay. But Christopher Lloyd's character at the end of the movie terrified me as a kid. So that's really all I remember. Like, obviously, like, all the Disney characters are in it. Warner Brothers is in it. So, like, Looney Tunes and Disney characters are in it. So this was a really, really big deal at the time.
I do remember that being kind of jarring.
Right.
That they were all in there together.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, you know, obviously nowadays it's a little unheard of. Now Sony and Marvel are working together with Spider-Man. But in this day and age, like, the studios, like, hate each other. So it's interesting that you got these two big studios to work together.
It was like the Kingdom Hearts of its time.
I guess so.
Is that a thing?
I mean, Kingdom Hearts is like Final Fantasy mixed with Disney, so sure, why not?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, I'm ready to just watch it, but I think we should read some comments from our fans first and have them tell us what they remember about this movie. Do you have any?
Yeah, Dan Johnson said, I had a childhood crush on Jessica Rabbit. Patty cake was a big deal. Dan Johnson, we know it wasn't just a childhood crush.
I don't know what the patty cake thing means.
But, I don't know what patty cake is.
I know
is
a
either.
Lot of people think Jessica Rabbit is super hot. And I've never understood the whole, like, animation, people being into that kind of thing. But
okay,
you know what?
That's
teach their own.
That's a little insulting because people constantly tell me I look like Jessica Rabbit.
I mean, you're very attractive, but like...
And you're like, she nasty.
I'm not saying she's nasty. I just don't get the whole, like, being into a cartoon character thing.
Yeah, it's a little weird to me.
And also, people say you look like every redhead actress in the world, so...
Pretty much.
But you know what? Good on you, Dan Johnson. I got two on Twitter. One is Get to the Movies, so Get to the Movies, that podcast is kind of like our brother-sister podcast kind of thing. I know the phrase is normally sister podcast or sister whatever, but two of their hosts have been on Remake Rewind. We've helped each other out, but
and they have penises,
and they all three of their hosts presumably have penises, peni.
Oh man, we've got to be rewriting our social consciousness here.
Yeah, but
they present male.
They present male. But they posted a GIF that I think it's from Dawson's Creek. It looks like Katie Holmes and Joshua Jackson.
I remember everything,
and it says I remember everything. And then Nick Gambino said, I remember the first time seeing this when I was like 5. I thought it was a straight-up cartoon because of the opening scene. But when the baby breaks character and starts talking like an adult man and later chomps down on a cigar, I was sold.
I definitely remember a moment. Let me say that again. I definitely remember a moment watching this with my entire family when they realized, oh, this is not a child's movie.
Yeah, I think it's PG. Like, I think it's one of those movies that's not... Especially for kids, but, you know, it's not...
It's really not for kids.
It's not for kids, but it's not so bad that, you know...
You're not getting kicked out of the room.
And you're not going to get scarred for life watching it.
Right.
I don't remember the opening scene of this movie. I remember some set pieces, like some big scenes, but I don't remember the movie as a whole, so I'm kind of... I'm actually really interested to just go back and watch it.
I remember it being basically a film noir with stupid cartoon characters just plugged on in there.
Well, At least we know it's not going to ruin her childhood. The only thing that could do is maybe ruin it because you might like it better this time.
We'll see. You know, just justify my childhood self.
We'll see. Let's just go watch it.
Stone Pictures invites you to tune in again for the most highly acclaimed movie of the year.
He's here.
Tune in again for Roger Rabbit, Jessica Rabbit, Baby Herman, Benny the Calf, and the most incredible cast of tunes ever to perform together in one motion picture.
What's up, Doc?
My biscuits are burning.
This is hot spot.
Tune in again for Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
The last time I worked with someone with a speech impediment.
A Steven Spielberg presentation, a Robert Zemeckis film, rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you. Check newspaper for showtimes.
Okay, so we just watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and, you know, honestly, I was actually really impressed with a lot of the stuff that happened in this movie, and I didn't realize it was a Robert Zemeckis film.
Really?
Yeah, it was a Zemeckis film.
And when you really think about it, it makes sense. Well. When you think about it, it makes sense.
Yes, I agree, and he worked very closely with, like, Steven Spielberg and all that stuff, so it was Amblin Entertainment, Disney and Warner Brothers, kind of like a joint venture between all three of those studios.
Right.
So I remember the big Disney characters and Warner Brothers characters being in it a lot more. And they were all basically glorified cameos. So I remember them being a much, much bigger part. And I was kind of disappointed that I didn't see as many cartoon characters as I remembered being in it.
I remember there being fewer cartoon characters.
Really? Right. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a really strong emotional bond to this film, so I wouldn't rely too heavily on my childhood memories.
Right. So, like, I just thought Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse were in it a much, much more than they actually were. And Bugs and Mickey were only in, like, one scene towards the end. Daffy and Donald Duck had, like, a pretty funny interaction in the middle.
Right.
And then you saw a bunch of other, like, you saw Yosemite Sam at one point. You saw Porky Pig on just, like, an advertisement. And then you saw Dumbo and a couple other, like the cows from, like, Dumbo and stuff. Like, you saw a bunch of these other characters. Betty Boop was in it. I liked her little, she had a pretty extended role in the movie.
Hers was such a downer.
Yeah, so she's
she's like a washed-up cocktail waitress.
Right. I think we should just summarize the movie really quick. Did you want to try to do it?
No.
Okay.
No.
So basically what this movie is it's in a world where cartoon characters and humans live together in more or less harmony.
No, they're segregated.
They're segregated, but they also, yeah, so there's Toontown and there's the real world, but they exist. Basically what happened.
Wait, is this the same Toontown from Space Jam?
No, this is the Toontown that's in Disneyland, though.
That was a missed opportunity. Space Jam.
Yeah, you dinguses.
Dingai.
So basically, in a nutshell, the movie opens up with what looks like a Looney Tunes-esque kind of cartoon, and then it turns out that they're actually filming it. So they actually use film cameras to record cartoon characters, which is kind of funny.
Right.
And Roger Rabbit keeps screwing up the scene because Jessica Rabbit hasn't been around. You don't really know what's going on yet, but you know that he's heartbroken. So the head of the studio, Maroon, hires Bob Hoskins' character. His name is Eddie Valiant, and he is a PI, and they hire him to go get proof that Jessica Rabbit is cheating on Roger. So he does that, and then the next day, Acme, so it's the same Acme from, like, Looney Tunes, who makes all, like, the stuff that Wile E. Coyote uses.
Right.
He winds up dead. And so, of course, they think Roger Rabbit did it, and he comes to Eddie, and Eddie basically has to try to help Roger prove his innocence. And the kind of the subplot is Eddie hates cartoon characters because his brother, who used to be his partner, got killed by a cartoon character. And that's pretty much the overarching plot. The end involves finding out that Christopher Lloyd's character, who plays a judge, is actually a cartoon character, and he wants to basically destroy Toontown to build a freeway, and everybody thinks it's the most ridiculous thing right. in the world. And then it turns out he's also the cartoon character that killed Bob Hoskins' brother.
But his whole plot line is still so relevant these days, right. as, you know, capitalism eats the country.
Well, the thing that's funny about this movie is it's very meta in that it makes fun, it talks about the dark side of the movie industry, but then it also talks about Los Angeles a lot. So there's a scene where Eddie is down on his luck. He has no money. He tries to get on the bus. They won't let him on. He shows them a check. They're like, what are we supposed to do with that? So he kind of like hitches a ride on the bumper of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And these like three like kids, he's like, I don't know if they're homeless or just street kids or whatever. If they were just kids,
right.
are like, hey, mister, why don't you have a car? And he goes like, it's Los Angeles. We have the best transit in the world. And the public transit in the world is like, not anymore. And then later on when...
He bumps some cigarettes off of this
And he
kid.
Bumps him and he thanks for the smokes.
I love that.
And then at the end of the movie when they reveal the whole plot, like Judge Doom, what he does is he buys the public transit, like he buys the trolley system, buys Acme, and then he was like, I'm building a freeway. And everyone's like, no one's going to use the freeway. We have public transit. And they're like, well, there is no public transit anymore because I bought it. And it's like, it's so absurd, but...
It's pretty much what's happening.
And then he says, there'll never be a traffic jam again. Nobody will ever have to wait.
It'll be beautiful.
It'll be beautiful.
I love it.
And of course, the 405 is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Any highlights for you? Is there anything you enjoyed about this movie?
I really enjoyed the beginning of this film where you're getting introduced to the entire world. You know, Toontown characters playing together with people in the real world. I love that you get to see a lot of the studio. What's it? Maroon Studios.
It was Maroon Studios,
which is
yep.
actually, I'm pretty sure it's Renmar Studios, which is one of these smaller, super old studios in Hollywood, which is actually really fun to work at because at one time it was one of the places where Desilu Pictures was, and I love Lucille Ball, and it's just really fun to be on these super old stages because they have so much history, and then when you get to see them come alive in a movie like this where it's supposed to be back in the day, it just adds this other dimension to it, and it's really right. fun to kind of like revisit your memories of working there. So that was really fun seeing them actually using the stages and seeing kind of like the behind the scenes type atmosphere. I like all the little tiny jokes that kind of are throwaway jokes towards the beginning of the movie, like Dumbo's flying outside of his window.
Oh,
he's like, the best
that.
Part is they work for peanuts.
Peanuts. Yeah, I wrote that down. That was
peanuts.
Really funny.
The cattle call. So like in the film industry, if you're not familiar with this, a cattle call is a really huge audition that is basically open to everyone, and hundreds of people show up.
And there was just cows.
Right. And in this,
that
it was just
really
a bunch
funny.
Of cows.
The other thing that this movie did really well, and I was really impressed with, is as the movie was going, I started to remember a little bit more. Like, it still wasn't one of those movies that I was able to, like, say line for line or anything like that. But I started to remember a little bit more of the plot. And this movie does some really good foreshadowing and also puts these, like, twists and turns where you never really know where it's going to go. Like, if you've never seen this movie before, like, there are several times where you think Jessica Rabbit's good and then bad, then good, then bad.
Right.
But there was something that I was impressed. There's a point where when they, it's pretty messed up. So there's a point where Judge Doom talks about there's a way that he can actually like rein in the insanity of Toontown because they're basically invulnerable, all the toons. Like you can't kill them. So he created this substance called the Dip, and they murder a cartoon character.
Everyone just watches.
Cops!
Like ostensibly, they are citizens with, you know, some semblance of rights because they're all living together. They're coexisting in the world. Well, they're relying on one another, and he's like straight up murders this dude.
Oh, and then you find out that they can legally own property later on.
Right.
Right? So it's like, they straight murdered a cent. Now, this one was like, it was just like a shoe, and it was kind of like rubbing up on him like a cat or a dog. So maybe there's levels of...
Oh, that's still so, messed up.
But it would be like if we took a cat and threw it in a thing of acid.
Don't say that.
That's what it's like. It's really messed up. Like, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And they did it in front of cops.
Right.
And this was supposed to be a judge. So there was one thing that kind of confused me. Christopher Lloyd played Judge Doom, and he says that he has jurisdiction over Toontown, but he's a judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has, like, these weasel goons who are like mobster gangster types. Does a judge normally oversee the actual search for a felon or a like wanted criminal?
Well, a judge is the only one who can grant a search warrant.
Right. But he literally has like these gangsters who like machine gun up Eddie's apartment at one point. Like, there's no police force in Toontown?
I guess not.
So that was a little strange that, like, the judge is personally overseeing this, personally going to, like, bars and then, like, doing searches himself.
He's crooked.
Yeah, it's true. He's definitely crooked. But, like, that really confused me. But one of the things I liked about this movie is you mentioned that it was a noir film.
Right.
And it definitely is. But I think this movie did a great job with all the twists and turns and the foreshadowing. Like, there's a point where Roger's hiding in this bar that is run by somebody named Dolores, who Eddie has a relationship with. And he's hiding, and Eddie's really concerned that Roger Rabbit became friends with all the people in the bar. And he's like, someone's going to snitch. And miraculously, like, everyone, like, actually gets Roger's back and doesn't say anything. But so ultimately, they still find him anyway, but it's not because of, like, the patrons. And they're about to kill Roger in a barrel of dip. And Eddie, like, distracts him by giving Roger some whiskey. And he gets, like, Popeye when he has spinach. And he, like, fights everybody just by running around. And there's a point where they accidentally spill all the dip. And Judge Doom looks terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And for the, you know, seeing this movie before and knowing that he is ultimately a cartoon character by the end, you know, that kind of makes sense. But if you didn't know he was a cartoon character the first time watching this movie, that's some incredible foreshadowing.
Right.
And they did a really great job. And then all the twists, there's a point where it's kind of messed up, actually. But Valiant goes to see Maroon again. And, like, I know what's going on. You're trying to buy Acme. You're, like, he thinks that the Maroon guy is the guy behind everything. And then he sees in a reflection, like, the barrel of a gun. And instead of, like, pulling this guy out of the way, he just jumps out of the way. And the guy gets shot. But then he looks out the window and sees Jessica Rabbit. So you think, oh, she's a bad, like, she's the bad person, right? And then later on, there's a point where Roger and Eddie are going to, like, storm, like, a building. And then Eddie goes, like, hey, you come around the building in a second. And then you just see Roger get hit, and you're like, oh, I wonder who it is. And then later on, you find out it was her again, but then you find out she did it to protect him. But it made it look like she was the bad guy multiple times in the movie. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah.
You weren't impressed with that? I think it was really great writing and a really great twists and turns. Like, I thought it was.
I mean, I think they were cheap plot devices.
But that's how those, like, noir films worked.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing about making it a noir film is it's an easy way to cover up any potential bad acting that you are going to have when an actor is carrying the film the way the main character does. Basically not acting with anyone, like, 90% of the time. This dude was, like, acting with a tennis ball most of the time, right. Which is really amazing. So not only is it a comedy, of course, which is the only way you can pull this off, but they also make it a noir so that you can have that exaggerated acting style that's going to cover a multitude of sins. One thing about this movie that really bugged me, basically just, like, ruined the entire thing for me. At the end, you find out that Doom is a cartoon character.
Right.
And you find out that the last will and testament endowed Toontown to all of the Toons.
Okay.
So Doom is willing to go through all of these steps to legally acquire Toontown.
Okay.
He's shady about it, but he wants to do it legally. Okay. He wants it to be ironclad, right?
Right.
Why doesn't he just wait until Toontown is willed to all of them and then kill all the other Toons?
Because he still wants it. Yeah, either way, he's going to kill the Toons.
That would have been so much easier.
So, I mean, I think the thing is he wanted, so he has two personas. So the problem is he has two personas, and realistically, his cartoon persona is a criminal. So he probably wouldn't have any claim to it, and he would still have to go around and murder everyone. But if he does it the other way, where as Judge Doom, who is a respected member of society, maybe has a little bit more on the up and up.
Respected member of what society, though? Because his end goal is for Toontown to basically not exist.
Right.
So he doesn't really care where the Toons go. He's not going to be governing anything, ultimately.
Right.
He cares about getting his money and getting out. He doesn't really want to stick around. He doesn't care if Toontown exists.
Right, but the problem is, if it goes to all the Toons, like, he would have to kill all of them, and that's a little bit different. Like, it's not as, like, working in the shadows as much, and it's not as legitimate. And if Like, either way, the plan doesn't make
sense. He leaves town for a day and a bomb goes off.
Well, the bomb doesn't. The problem is, no matter what, he's killing all these cartoon characters.
Which he doesn't care about.
Which ultimately doesn't make sense. Like, he's still basically going to be doing a genocide no matter what.
Yeah.
Which is pretty messed up. Yeah, that part, it doesn't really make a ton of sense.
I'm just thinking in terms of convenience.
Right. Well, I think the thing is, he does want the money for it. And to legitimately be able to have that money, he needs to have his persona, Judge Doom, be able to be on the up and up. Either way, he would still be murdering people or cartoons, which is a little bit weird.
It is a little weird.
Oh, one of the other things I really liked about this movie, and they kind of foreshadow this at the beginning, there's a point where when they're telling Eddie about the murder, they're at Acme's warehouse, and you see all these like little things like portable holes, and you see like they take a hole and they put it on the wall and you can put his hand through, and then they had this like hammer thing where he like squeezes it and it has like one of those like punching bag arm things that extends, right?
If they have all that, how are they ever in any kind of trouble?
Well, that's the thing. Well, and then there's also like guns that the bullets can like follow people around. They're like sentient. Well, that's the point. The cartoon characters can't die until they use this acetone, benzene, and paint thinner stuff, right? So that's the kind of the point. But what I liked about it was later on at the end of the movie, Doom has Eddie like pinned between this big metal barrel and a giant magnet, and he grabs, like, he's able to grab one of these holes, the portable holes, and use it to like make a chunk of the magnet disappear. And then he uses the punching thing to hit a lever and, you know, turn off the machine. So like, I think this movie was, in a way, like, I get that you don't like the noir, you think it's kind of, I get what you're saying, but I think like it was masterfully done for what it is. Like, I don't feel like there's a wasted frame in this movie. I think they really planned out everything, and I think they did a really great job.
Yeah, watching it, that really impressed me. Just the sheer insane amount of work that they must have gone through to pull this off the year that they did.
1988. I didn't realize it was that old. I thought it was in the 90s.
As old as me.
It's as old as us. There's a few things. So in that detail, there's a few things that are pretty interesting in it. So You kind of mentioned that, you know, Bob Hoskins had to act by himself for most of the scenes.
It was really impressive. Much as I don't like him as an actor, that was impressive.
The thing that's sad is, like, I know he's been in good things, but the only thing that I remember him in is this movie and the Mario Brothers movie.
He's a genuinely unmemorable dude. Sorry.
But one of the things that, it's funny that you mentioned that, is there are mistakes that he made. So there are a couple scenes where he forgot his eye line. So he's talking to Roger Rabbit, who's supposed to be 3 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So they had to have paint Roger Rabbit on top of like boxes or like standing or jumping up and down to kind of make it make sense where Bob Hoskins was looking. So they definitely had to fix some of that stuff. And you did kind of call that out.
I mean, yeah, the pulling off this movie was just crazy altogether. And that was in part because of all the licensing stuff they had to do. So since the movie was being made by Disney, it was a Touchstone Pictures film, Warner Brothers would only allow the use of their biggest toon stars. So like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, they had to get an equal amount of screen time as their Disney stars, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, which is, you know, kind of unheard of. I think as a society, our fan favorites are usually the big Disney stars.
Right.
Because of this, both sets of characters are always together in frame when one from the other group is on screen.
I feel like they even had like the same number of lines too.
Yeah, like there was a moment when Mickey's on screen where I kind of thought they were just gonna have him silent. Like I thought that maybe there was some kind of a weird licensing
issue. It was like Steamboat Willie style
Mickey. Yeah, then he eventually, you know, had his line. I was like, oh well, there it is, there's that annoying little voice. Oh boy.
The thing that was weird about this movie is there's a few times where like tunes that aren't normally known for being like violent and weird do stuff. So there's a point where Bob Hoskins' character gets tricked into going into the wrong building because he sees somebody who looks like Jessica Rabbit from a distance, and it's this like really ugly cartoon. So he runs away and goes into this room that has no wall, and he like falls off this like skyscraper, and he like lands on this pole, and then like Tweety knocks him off.
That was a disturbing scene.
Right. And then Tweety like knocks him off like finger by finger, so he falls down, and then he's like falling. And Mickey and Bugs Bunny are skydiving together, and he's like, you guys need to help me. And they're both kind of like, nah, bruh. And gives him a spare tire instead of a spare parachute.
Right.
And it's like, he could have died, and I don't remember how he actually survived, but that was a little strange that these characters who are normally like the heroic ones that help people We're basically trying to kill this character for no reason.
You meet your childhood characters in a nightmare, basically.
Right.
This movie, I think that might have been what bugs me most about this movie, other than live action combined with random cartoon characters, which just skeeves me out. I can't get over it. I don't know why. I don't like it. But the fact that this movie is clearly not a kid's movie.
What about that Frank Sinatra sword? That was disturbing.
Oh my god. I remember that.
I don't remember that at all.
I remember I heard Frank Sinatra's voice and I felt this pit in the bottom of my stomach because I knew I was about to see that freaky Frank Sinatra sword face. I did not like it. Something about when they animate Frank Sinatra, there was like this one cartoon I saw as a child and it was a rooster, but it was Frank Sinatra. Something about it just, it disturbs me on a primal level and I cannot scrub that cartoon from my memory. Anyway, what was I saying?
I don't remember.
No, okay. You
were just talking about how it disturbs you, right, the style.
It's not a kid's movie. For sure.
Right.
It's not really an adult's movie, because sitting here as an adult and watching it, it just feels gross. It feels weird and gross and disjointed and not at the intellectual level that it should be to be an adult movie.
I also think it's the time, though. So then you think
it must be a family movie, but I think that's even more uncomfortable than a child watching this alone.
Right. So the thing that's weird is there are a lot more adult jokes than I remember, that I remembered. Like, there's a point where...
There's a smoking baby and a cartoon character that's 90% breast.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So what's weird is there's a point where Jessica Rabbit comes to Eddie's office and is like, I'll do anything. And everything, and like his pants fall down.
Yeah.
And then his girlfriend comes in, like, oh, are you dabbling in watercolor now? Or something like that. And then there's a point where it's weird. So her boobs literally bounce as she walks. And like one of the other trivia things that I found was the art director wanted it to be like weird and unusual. So when a natural woman's breasts would move, bounce up, hers bounces down. So like they move in opposite ways just to make it look a little off and unnatural.
So weird. I appreciate that they kept some of the jokes that were in the old cartoons that don't really make sense in modern times. Like, people drank so heavily back in the day that everyone had a seltzer bottle.
Right.
Which, when kids watch cartoons, I don't know what they think that that is, because that does not exist in most modern households. But there's always a seltzer bottle in a cartoon that's ready for someone to pull the trigger and spray someone in the face with it.
Right. The other thing, the little, we're making mixed drinks.
You know, I love gin and tonic. We should have a seltzer bottle.
That's, we can get a seltzer bottle, girl.
We should get a seltzer bottle.
The other joke that I really liked is there's a point where, you kind of mentioned it at the top of the episode, where Betty Boop is just a cocktail waitress, and, you know, she does her, like, boop, boop, ba-doop thing. She's like, I still got
boop,
it, but
boop-y-doop.
I, you know, the cartoons are all in color now, so I can't really work. And, you know, I thought that was, like, really sad and everything, because, you know, she was, like, one of the biggest cartoons of all time for a very long time.
Kind of pervy, though, when you think about it.
Oh, it's really weird.
She's, like, got her garter out there on display, and she
and her
was...
head is bigger than the rest of her body.
She was being drawn at a time when, like, that kind of outfit was very risque.
Right.
I don't know how Betty Boop was ever a thing.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I don't have much more to talk about the movie. Like, I've got a few other little trivia bits, but... You know, the only other scene that I kind of... I actually really liked the end scene. So the only thing that I really remembered about this movie as a kid was the basically the last 10, 15 minutes of the movie. Like, I really remember, like, the steam engine part. And I didn't want to spoil it for you at the beginning, but Christopher Lloyd's eyes creeped me out as a kid when you find out that he's a cartoon. And he's still walking around as a human. The only thing you can see that's animated is his eyes. And they're big and red. And
I mean, I was pretty captivated by those eyes, and I'm 30, so...
Yeah, it creeped me out as a kid. And... I remember that scene being a little scary, and then I forgot all about those weasels. Like, there's a whole point where the weasels are going to be killing all the cartoon characters.
I love that they're literally all weasels.
Yeah, and there's a point where they keep laughing at stuff, and Judge Doom keeps saying, like, you guys are going to laugh yourselves to death, like, just like your hyena cousins, which I'm like, you know, you kind of think that's just a throwaway line, like, you know, they might be related to hyenas, and there's laughing hyenas. But then there's a point where
I'm pretty sure weasels are not related.
They're not related, and, like... But in this, they say they're cousins, right? So, you know, you think it's just a throwaway line. And then there's a point where Judge Doom says it again. And then Bob Hoskins' character, Eddie, like kind of gets this idea, and so he starts doing this like song and like hurting himself on purpose, and all the weasels literally laughed themselves to death and everything. So it's like little stupid things like that like are kind of funny.
The word that kept coming to mind is asinine.
Nah.
But this like, movie is asinine.
It is a little asinine, but I
never want to watch it again.
I think what's interesting, I think what it is at the time, obviously from an effects point of view, this was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And you also have to look at right now, like we don't really watch Looney Tunes and stuff like that, but when we, in the 80s, Looney Tunes were still huge. Like I watched the Looney Tunes as a kid. And people were still watching reruns of Looney Tunes. Like, what we watch and everything now is a lot more sophisticated. Obviously, we're in the golden era of television. We're watching all these dramas. And
right. And you can't really peddle violent, misogynistic cartoons to kids anymore.
But at the time, I get it. At the time, those cartoons were still what you watched on Saturday mornings. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's a product of its time. Like, it is what it is. The only other thing I got a couple other trivia points. Originally, they were going to have Tim Curry be Judge Doom, and Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg thought he was too scary.
But Christopher Lloyd is 10 times scarier than...
No, so actually, that's not the only time this happened. So there was a point where Tim Curry was supposed to be the Joker in the Batman animated series, and his laugh and voice was too scary that like they tested it, and kids found it too scary, and that's how Mark Hamill got the job.
Oh, God. Mark Hamill's such a non-entity.
No, dude, Mark Hamill is an amazing voice actor.
He's a great voice actor, but watching him on screen...
I get what you're saying on that,
but... He has zero charisma.
From a voice acting standpoint, he's phenomenal.
Yes.
He's one of the best voice actors out there.
Second only to Billy... What's his face?
Billy West?
Billy West.
Billy West is great.
I mean, he's no Tex Avery, but...
And Joe DiMaggio. He's working his way up there. Mel Blanc.
Right.
Yeah, that's... And Tara Strong. other than that, like, so that I found was pretty interesting. Originally, they actually wanted Bill Murray to play Eddie's character, and Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg both tried calling him, and I guess he didn't pick up the phone. It's like, he didn't get the
Bill
call.
Bill Murray's a jerk.
Well, it turns out, actually, when he found out, he read this in an interview, and he was, like, in a public place, and he, like, started, like, crying, because he's, like, he would have done this movie. He loved the movie, so that's really all the little... things that I've got. Actually, I got one more, and I actually really, really like this one.
I sit and ask myself, how can this movie be worse with Bill Murray?
Nah, Bill Murray would have been great.
Oh, he's such
so, one of the things that I really like is this apparently is a common term that Disney employees still use. There's this thing that's got called, there's this thing called Bump the Lamp, and there's a scene where they're at the bar, and Roger, like, bumps a lamp, and so it kind of shakes, and they had to have his shadow and the lamp shadow match.
Oof.
And so they were saying, like, they put a ton of extra work into this to make sure the shadows were matching. So that is now, like, a phrase wherein Disney employees will say, like, hey, bump the lamp to make sure, like, hey, put that extra effort in, go the extra mile. And, like, this movie taught all these Disney people a lot about animating and a lot about special effects. And it's a ton of work. Like, just the magnitude of work they had to put into this movie is impressive enough to, I think, warrant watching this movie.
Right. It definitely is. It's something that I think you need to see just once.
Right. So I think it's safe to say for you, your childhood memories are intact. Like, you're vindicated.
I think it's worse than what I remember.
I'm torn. So this, obviously, like I said, this wasn't a huge part of my childhood. I watched this movie every time it came on TV, but I probably haven't watched this movie since I was like 10 years old or even younger, and I enjoyed it. Like, I was laughing throughout. I think you kind of went into it a little bit kind of wanting to, because you laughed throughout the movie. You laughed several times.
I laughed at the stupid jokes, but overall it was asinine.
I think this is one that I would maybe watch again 5 years or something like that. Like, I don't think this is something I'm gonna watch over and over again, but I liked it. I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to like it. So I'm not going to say childhood ruined because it wasn't big, but it's one of those movies, like, if you have somebody who's never watched it before, maybe watch it with them. Or, you know, this could be fun to watch, you know, with a couple of friends, have a couple beers, crack a cold one with the boys.
From a filmmaker perspective, it's worth the watch.
Yeah, I agree.
It's well done in that way. And I'm done with it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Forever.
That's fair. So... Miss Katrina,
mm-hmm.
What are we going to be watching next week? Or not next week, but our next episode?
We are going to be watching My Girl. another Macaulay Culkin movie, right, which you love to do.
I love Macaulay Culkin movies. I
loved this movie when I was a kid.
I don't remember it much, but I remember watching it a lot, and I remember being really affected by his death.
Yeah. Never looked at a beehive the same way. In fact, I used a
clip from that movie in our Pagemaster episode for our teaser. yeah, that'll be fun to watch. So, of course, if you guys can send us tweets, comments, DMs on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and let us know what you remember about this movie, how it affected you as children, and, you know, if it's something that you guys are still watching to this day. But other than that, thank you guys for listening. You can check out everything that's MDX Pods related at mdxpods.com, Twitter and Instagram at mdxpods. We're also on Facebook. You can check out everything Katrina does. Where?
I'm on YouTube at Katrinosity and all over the internet, basically. I'm check pretty it out. Easy to find.
Easy to find. She's got some really great DIY. Is it DIY or DY? It is DIY. She has this really cool video that she just put out recently about like a constellation lamp. That's really, really cool. I'm really glad she made it. I'm really enjoying having it. So check out her YouTube. It's great.
I'm glad you like the lamp.
I really like it. And of course, check out our other podcasts, Remake Rewind. Dustin's actually going to be coming back for a special episode. And yeah, check it out. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.